Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This morning we're going to talk about eating disorders. And most of us know that there is a really big group of diagnosis in regard to eating disorders. I think what gets confusing is it's hard to keep track of which one is what. So I thought we'd go over it in the hopes that if there's somebody out there who thinks that they're struggling and wonders if they indeed have got a true problem with their eating likes and dislikes, then maybe they need to see someone and have it diagnosed properly. Some of the eating disorders that we're going to talk about today actually take the lives of people. It's not one of those things that's just, you know, like I don't know, like somebody who will only eat, like in my lifetime I've met people who only eat meat. They don't eat any greens. They don't eat any potatoes. They just eat meat. They grew up on farms and things like that, and meat was at breakfast, meat was at lunch, meat was at dinner. This can cause many, many ill effects. The only good thing about it is most of those people that I've known in my lifetime have raised their own meat. Consequently, they're actually doing themselves a favor because they're not filled with hormones and all kinds of additives that are being given to their cattle. So, and there's other people that survive on, I remember in high school meeting a girlfriend, I think I was in ninth grade, who only ate like cupcakes and cookies, and she was really, really skinny. And because my weight has always been an issue for me, even back then, I remember saying to her, how can you always, you just eat junk. You eat sweets and you know, like all sugar stuff. And she goes, because I don't eat a lot. She said, but it's what I like, so I only eat this. I said, do you ever like have a bowl of cereal, or do you ever have like eat dinner at your house? And she said, no. My mom's okay with it. My mom kind of eats like this too. And of course, I didn't know her past the ninth grade. I don't know what happened to her, but I've never forgotten it because I've always thought to myself, God, I'd probably weigh about 500 pounds if all I ever ate was cupcakes and cookies and all the, especially now that I know better, I didn't know this then, but when I was a kid, everything she ate was like prepackaged, you know, like Hostess Twinkies and Ding Dongs and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, I actually remember wishing I could eat like that. And now, of course, I'm glad that I couldn't. So I did do some research, and I did find a couple of really good sites. So we're going to peruse down through those this morning, because the one that I did like the best is very large, so I probably won't go over all of it, but we're going to touch base on a lot of it and maybe answer some questions for some of you. First, I'm going to bring Shelley in so she can be with us while we're reading it. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. And you?
That's good. I'm good. I got up early this morning and, you know, my daughter works now all night long, so it's my job to get all the kids off for school in the morning. So the room is usually filled with very excited teenagers that are just so thrilled to be going to school. So that's like, it's like a room in a wax museum because everybody's sitting on the couch with their notebooks or their book bags on their laps, looking like they're in some kind of a, I don't want to go to school zone. And then I wake up the little guy who's 7 now, and he says to me this morning, he says, do you really think I like getting up this early and going to school? I said, Yes, I do think you really enjoy it. And he goes, well, you're wrong, Graham. I don't like getting up this early to go to school. So he's you know, he makes all of it worth it because, well, I'm looking at the bigger kids, you know, who are always, you know, they're it's not like they're in a bad mood or anything, but it's like they're not even here yet.
Right.
They walk in kind of, they're all on a, because there's, every morning there's Spike who goes to work and he takes the other two teenagers to school, and Joshua and Austin, and they all fall out of bed, roll into the shower, back out again, and then pretty soon everybody comes out, like I say, in kind of like zombie mode. They don't talk. They don't talk to each other. It's, you know, I come out and say, good morning, everybody. Hi, Graham. You know, that's all I get. So it is funny in the morning. It really is
funny.
So, but they, you know, and then sometimes they'll grab something, a piece of fruit or a Pop-Tart or something like that out of the refrigerator. And Grandpa always says, is that all you're having for breakfast? I say, no, schools, all public schools serve breakfast in school now, and it's free. It doesn't cost them any money. And they go to the cafeteria and usually get one of those cups of cereal and some milk or some juice every morning as well as that. They're not real big eaters when they first fall out of bed. Of course, they make up for that the rest of the day. But but morning time is amusing, very funny. And my oldest grandson, I swear to God, he rolls out of bed from the shower to the car, and I mean, and is on his way to work. He's very funny. So, anyway, we're going to talk this morning about this these eating disorders. And have you ever known anybody, Shelley, with a really bad eating disorder like bulimia or anorexia or any of those kind of things?
Well, I mean, personally, my sister was, I think, bulimic. One of them is the body's doing it. The other one is psychological, and you're doing it to yourself. But she was under tremendous stress, and she was doing, the binging and purging.
Due to
stress, she started losing her hair. My father was extremely abusive, and we were working for him. And over a few month period of time, I saw her losing weight. She was going to the bathroom constantly. I noticed her hair was starting to thin out. I mean, she was looking god-awful. And I confronted her about it, and I found out that because of nerves, she couldn't keep any of her food down. And her body was ejecting it involuntarily. In the beginning, she was doing it because she was just under so much stress, and then her body started doing it on its own. So she ended up quitting. We talked, and, you know, we got her a solution to the problem. She was afraid of my father, though, and he was being very cruel to her. And shortly after removing herself from that stressful situation, her eating returned to normal. So this was stress-induced, but she was very, very sick for a while after that because she had messed so much with the body's normal rhythm. But she did get in a good place. The only other person I knew that had an eating disorder who was a famous person, the first time I even knew about the eating disorder was Karen Carpenter. You remember when she passed away? I think she had anorexia.
Yes.
And I love the music of the Carpenters. It's just sweet, pretty music, you know? And I grew up on
too.
It, and I loved it. And when I heard that somebody as famous as her, as successful as her, had that, it stuns me. It just absolutely shocked me. Like, oh my God, she had so much money. How wasn't there somebody there who could help her? But it was it wasn't very well known at that time.
Well, and I think even now, because everybody who is afflicted with an eating disorder, each individual has so many differences. I guess because your own body manifests all the additional problems, it makes everybody hard to like pinpoint what the real problem is. Most of the articles I read, and the one that I'm going to read this morning or peruse through, is about it being a, you know, a mental thing, a psychological mm-hmm. thing. And of course,
right.
through the years, I at the Institute, I met many, many people with eating disorders. And
yep.
I am going to tell a beautiful story about one that's a story of recovery and still, gosh, almost 10 years later, is still a story of recovery. So
wonderful.
I want to make sure everybody knows that if you're feeling like you're locked into something that you just have to deal with the rest of your life because everything you've tried hasn't worked, I will share with you this story because it is one of recovery. It's one of love and support and shows people that it is possible to really overcome something like this, which can take over your whole life, by the way. You can't
okay.
function and do anything else. Once this really gets you in its grips, you belong to it. You know, it's like its own entity. So eating disorders are conditions defined by abnormal eating habits that may involve either insufficient or excessive food intake to the detriment of an individual's physical and mental health. Bulimia nervosa and anorexia nervosa are the most common specific forms in the United Kingdom, here too in the United States. Other types of eating disorders include binge eating disorder and eating disorder not otherwise specified. In other words, kind of like what I said about the girl that ate the Twinkies and all that kind of stuff, obviously that was an eating disorder, but there's no real
right.
true diagnosis for that because when somebody falls into that particular little hole, there isn't a name for it yet because they're few and far between. Bulimia nervosa is a disorder characterized by binge eating and purging. Purging can include self-induced vomiting, over-exercising, and the usage of diuretics, enemas, and laxatives. Anorexia nervosa is characterized by extreme food restriction to the point of self-starvation and excessive weight loss. Though primarily thought of as affecting females, an estimated 5 to 10 million being affected with eating disorders affect males as well. An estimated 10 to 15% of people with eating disorders are males. And that was established in 1999, so I'm sure it's a greater number by now. Although eating disorders are increasing all over the world among both men and women, there is evidence to suggest that it is women in the Western world who are at the highest risk of developing them, and the degree of westernization increases the risk. I guess that particular sentence means the lifestyle in the Western world.
Yeah.
And it supports it a little bit more, which, of course, has to do with what you're supposed to look like. Nearly half of all Americans personally know someone with an eating disorder. The skill to comprehend the central processes of appetite is increased tremendously since leptin was discovered, and the skill to observe the functions of the brain as well. Interactions between motivational, homeostatic, and self-regulatory control processes are involved in eating behavior, which is a key component in eating disorders. See, this is all your brain-body function. This is all mind over body in a lot of cases. The precise cause of eating disorders is not entirely understood, but there is evidence that it may be linked to other medical conditions and situations. Cultural idealization of thinness and youthfulness have contributed to eating disorders affecting diverse populations. One study showed that girls with ADHD have a greater chance of getting an eating disorder than those not affected by ADHD. Another study suggested that women with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, especially due to sexually related trauma, are more likely to develop anorexia nervosa. One study showed that foster girls are more likely to develop bulimia nervosa. Some think that peer pressure and idealized body type seen in the media are also a significant factor. I would say to you, from my point of view, that right there, that particular sentence is probably the biggest one. And according to the other studies that I read, there was no talk about PTSD, although that makes sense to me in some of the articles I read, and nothing about ADHD. But I guess if you're having trouble grasping how to deal with things, which is what ADHD is, then I can understand how you could fall into a problem with an eating disorder. Recent studies have found evidence of correlation between patients with bulimia nervosa and substance use disorders. And while that would explain, depending on laxatives and diuretics and all that kind of stuff, a pill to fix everything, that makes sense to me as well. In addition, anxiety disorders and personality disorders are common occurrences with clients of eating disorders. I'm going to do a little side note on this. With the different situations that came to the Institute, not being a psychologist, but being a really, really spent my whole life listening to and talking to people kind of person, I would say that that last comment is probably true. When just listening to somebody with an eating disorder, almost always you detect a deeper thing, just like what you just mentioned about your sister. She was going through a form of abuse, and instead of the abuse manifesting itself into some kind of rebuttal or some kind of fighting back, it went inward. And very sadly, that happens a lot, and that's the biggest, saddest part of a child that's abused, because they get to a point where they almost feel like it is them, and they need to do something about themselves, so that, especially if the abuse is coming from a parent, so that the parent will care more about them. So I can understand how that could, you know, snowball into being something that had to do with what you look like, you know, at the end of the day. While proper treatment can be highly effective for many suffering from specific types of eating disorders, the consequences of eating disorders can be severe, including death, whether from direct medical effects of disturbed eating habits or from comorbid conditions such as suicidal thoughts. So that kind of reiterates that. I'm gonna go through these particular references to what each one of these is: anorexia nervosa, bulimia, and binge eating. And then there's another one that is called PICA, which I never heard of until I did this research, and you will recognize it. You will remember it when I read what they say it is, but I never knew it had a name.
Okay.
Anorexia nervosa, characterized by refusal to maintain a healthy body weight, an obsessive fear of gaining weight, and an unrealistic perception of current body weight. I had one person tell me, and I saw one of these shows on television too that I watched years ago, about a young woman who stood in front of her mirror, and she was very, very, very thin, very thin, skeletally thin. And when the doctor asked her what she saw when she looked in the mirror, she turned sideways and she said, "I see somebody who's like way, way overweight." And I was pretty young when I watched that, and I thought to myself, how can you see that? I mean, she, you know, you've seen some of the pictures that they show, even in the Scandal magazines and stuff like that. They're always snapping a shot of somebody who's got something like this going on, and they're skeletal. I mean, there's nothing to them. And this girl was 15 years old. This is probably, 25 years ago that I saw this show. And he said, but you're not. He said, can't you, like, wrap your hand around your wrist and see how thin you are? And she said, yes. And she did that, and her hand overlapped all the way around even her upper arm. And she said, I still, when I look in the mirror, I see somebody who's way, way, way too fat. So your mind can really play some very strange tricks on you. So anorexia can cause menstruation to stop. I knew about that as well. And often leads to bone loss, loss of skin integrity. It greatly stresses the heart, increasing the risk of heart attacks and related heart problems. The risk of death is greatly increased in individuals with this disease. Social pressures in society and media play a role in an individual's obsession on their outer appearances. The most underlining factor researchers are starting to take notice of is that it may not just be a vanity, social, or media issue, but it could also be related to biological or genetic components. Now, it doesn't explain what they mean by that. You want to give a guess at what they're talking about, Shelley, but it could also be related to biological or genetic components. What do you think they mean by that?
I mean, well, hereditary would mean like if it ran in your family, or, you know, I mean, if the propensity to have this disorder, if there were other people in your family with it. And biological would be if there were physical factors that, I mean, this is how I'm taking it, that played a part in it that created that propensity.
You know, I've never read an article, perhaps you have, or perhaps you have a personal, opportunity to have met somebody like this. I don't think I've ever met somebody who had somebody else in their family with the same problem. I'm trying to think right now. I don't think I ever have, which is not to say there aren't people out there where mom or an older sister or an older brother or somebody had the same problem, and maybe they don't talk anywhere in any of the things that I read about growing out of it, by the way. I suspect that if there's people out there that have a teenager, you know, like a 13, 14, 15-year-old, that you realize is struggling with something like this, and you think it's a growing curve, and that they're probably going to get past this. According to everything I read yesterday, there's no kind of proof that that's going to happen. If they are immersed in this kind of an eating disorder, bulimia or anorexia, or anything like these two things, then, or just of a mindset that they're just so completely unhappy with what they look like, even though they're beautiful, they need some help. You need to get them some help. So we'll just take that as a side component. Bulimia nervosa, characterized by recurrent binge eating followed by compensatory behaviors such as purging, self-induced vomiting, excessive use of laxatives, diuretics, or excessive exercise. Fasting and over-exercising may also be used as a method of purging following a binge. Now, this particular article doesn't go into details about bulimia, so I read another article because I know about this from other people. If you're bulimic and you're constantly purging, something else takes place in your body. Your actual inside your mouth, from having all the acids and everything of purging continuously. Your teeth become destroyed. Your gums, very often you get things like pyorrhea and trench mouth and things like that from having all of, because you really there's really nothing there to purge if this is what you're doing all the time. So what you're really sending back out again is a little bit of food, and mostly all of the acids and the bile and everything that our body creates to break down the food. So that goes through your mouth. And young girls that I've met that have been suffering with something like this for more than a year, often their teeth are almost destroyed. And then you understand that your mandible, your jaw, and what holds your teeth and everything is a bone. So that too can become distressed and break down. So you're damaging a lot more than you have any idea you are. And then if instead of vomiting, you're doing things like constant laxatives and things like that, your body is equipped with muscle control in the lower part of your body so that you can release feces. And if you take diuretics so that it just runs out of you all the time, then those things stop to work too. And in many cases, you manifest things like colon cancer and other things in that part of your body because you've tried to take away what your body does naturally. And your body must almost like get confused and say, well, I guess they don't want me to do this, so I'm going to quit. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just, you know. But something happens, and we did have a guest a very, very long time ago that this was happening to. And that's how I know about that part of it. But this is scary stuff, you know. And if it's all to be what you think other people want you to be, then you need to think about this. Eating disorders not otherwise specified. And believe it or not, they have the initials EDNOS, is an eating disorder that does not meet the regular eating disorder criteria for anorexia or bulimia. Examples can be a female who suffers from anorexia but still has her period, or someone who may be at a healthy weight but who has anorexic thought patterns and behavior. It can mean the sufferer equally participates in some anorexic as well as bulimic behaviors, sometimes referred to as Burge-type anorexia, or to any combination of eating disorder behaviors that do not directly put them in a separate category. In other words, if somebody is experimenting with these things, and maybe they have a friend or they've seen somebody who's doing this and sees that they're functioning. I remember quite a while back there was a lot of movies on the what I call the Women's Channel, their Lifetime. And there were stories about cheerleaders who had to maintain a certain weight, and a whole group of them all became bulimic just because coach wouldn't let them, you know, gain any weight and things like that. So I can understand the, the misery loves company kind of a thing with a bunch of young girls who are getting together and all want to achieve the same goal, such as being the best cheerleading team, or tumblers to young girls that do a lot of tumbling and things like that. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with their body. When your body can't be what it needs to be and you keep fighting it, I'm not saying that you should let yourself get obese because you think that's what your body wants to be. I don't want to open any of those kind of doors for anybody, even though I'd like to think that's what's going on with myself. I know it isn't. So it is a disorder. if you are trying to alter this way instead of just choosing a wise program to be on, this is a big mistake. This is not the way to do this. There's also binge eating disorder, which is compulsive overeating. And apparently this is something that is a lot bigger than we know, too. This type of eating disorder is even more common than bulimia or anorexia. This disorder does not have a category of people in which it can develop. In fact, this disorder can develop in a range of ages and is unbiased to classes. So, we may even know some people that do that, don't you think?
Well, I actually know two women who would, when they would get like really, really stressed out, would go to like an Entenmann shop, buy a bunch of Entenmanns, and then the two of them would, I never participated in it, but they would literally sit around for a day and just eat cake and muffins and pies from like the beginning of the morning. I mean, they would eat like 10 Entenmann cakes between the two of them, and then they couldn't get out of bed for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
But they would do this as a consolation when one of them would go through something. They would go through this together, and it was like the most bizarre thing I ever saw.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
I think they didn't stay there.
Right.
They'd get past it, and they'd be okay. But it would affect them for days because the amount of sugar and carbs and everything, you know, they would do this and then they were almost like high for a couple of days. They couldn't function.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I
can't.
What?
Yeah, I know people that would do something like that as well. Somebody who would, well, it's like, you know, I talk about this a lot to young couples and not so young couples. Many, many years ago, there was a movie called The Days of Wine and Roses. And if you hook up with somebody that will support your secrets, if you will, the things that you do behind closed doors because you know that it wouldn't be accepted out there in the world, that's not a good thing. If you can find somebody who can make you feel like smoking crack or shooting up or eating five boxes of Entenmanns is okay, then you'll pull that person into you because you will both support the same thing. And it's, you know, the old thing, misery loves company. It's, you know, if there's more than you doing it, for some reason, our psyche lets us believe that it means it's okay.
Right.
Like, if Shelley, if you're willing to do this with me, then, you know, I have great respect for you. I think you got a good head on your shoulders. So if I can talk you into doing something bad with me, it just reinforces the fact that I think it's okay.
All right.
So this is another, you know, that's another thing that we, you know, that we do as human beings. And I meet couples like that. I meet couples all the time who support each other. They never should have gotten together because they support each other's really, really bad habits. And alone, they'll be a much happier, better person. But because we like to think there's somebody who thinks like us and thinks that this behavior is acceptable and will do it with you, you make yourself believe that it's all right then. So that's a whole other story, but it's still, you know, it's still a part of these kind of things. Although everything I've read tells me that bulimia and anorexia is most of the time a secret. Most of the time a person does it totally alone, and it's a secret that they keep to themselves, which is also incredibly harmful to the psyche. Now, here's this other one that I said. It's called PICA, P-I-C-A. K characterized by a compulsive craving for eating, chewing, or licking non-food items or foods containing no nutrition. This can include such things as chalk, paper, plaster, paint chips, baking soda, starch, glue, rust, ice, coffee grounds, cigarette ashes. These individuals cannot distinguish a difference between food and non-food items. Now, I used to know somebody who drank cornstarch, and they did it because they thought it kept them thin. And
wow.
I've never forgotten that person. It was a very, very long time ago. I want to say more than 30 years ago. But have you ever worked with cornstarch, Shelley, when you're cooking or anything?
No, not really. I would think it would be kind of pasty.
If you put cornstarch in a cup, powdered cornstarch in a cup, and then pour water on it and stir it up, if you let it sit again for a few minutes, it gets like clay. It separates the water and the cornstarch separates again. If you make gravy with cornstarch and let it cool, it gets like gelatin.
I can't imagine.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of I have used it because I used it for gravy. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Cornstarch is a great thing because I used mounds of cornstarch on babies' butts because it has no perfume in it. It stays on their little rashed butt. When they get wet, it protects them. It's a great thing for stuff like that. But I don't think it's so great to mix up and drink. And this person did that on a regular basis.
Wow.
Because they thought it filled them up so that they wouldn't eat.
There was a show on television. I think it's off the air now because I don't see it being advertised anymore, but it was on one of the cable channels like A&E or the Travel Channel or something like that, but it was about bizarre eating habits of people, and I only saw one or two of the shows, but there's people out there that actually eat, that they're compelled to eat on a regular basis things that you would think would be toxic to the human body. I don't understand how they can eat them. First, I don't understand why they crave them, and I don't understand how they can eat them every day and, like, not be hospitalized. One woman had a propensity, I'm not kidding you, I actually saw this, for toilet paper. She just liked the way it felt on her tongue. She would eat, like, two or three rolls of toilet paper a day. She would just tear off a sheet, and she would just be constantly nibbling on it throughout. They filmed her. They showed her doing it. And she just had this craving for the way it felt and everything. There was another woman who had to do a shot of, like, laundry detergent once or twice a day. Laundry detergent, you know, to wash your clothes with. And it was like, that's the one that really confused me because I didn't understand why that wasn't toxic to her. And they showed these people and people swallowing, like, metallic items. There was one guy who had been operated on several times because he kept swallowing stuff that couldn't pass through his body, and he actually got a kick out of it when he had to go to the hospital to be operated on. And it's like it never fazed him. And then he'd get out of the hospital, bam, he'd go home, and 6 months later he'd eat something else that was too big to pass through his body again. It was the most bizarre show. Like I said, I don't think it's on anymore, but there was a whole season of it, and they covered it. They said, I forgot the name of the show, but I bet if you Google Bizarre Eating Habits TV show, it'll come up. But it was mind-boggling. I couldn't believe some of the things I saw on there.
Well, I think I remember that show. I don't think I ever watched it, but I think I remember that show. But I have read also about that kind of, well, and I think we touched on this a couple weeks ago about babies, children that found the need to, like, chew on the sides of their cribs. And you remember back in the day when they had so much toxin in the paints, and then they started painting.
Oh, right.
Because we're getting sick and getting poisoned by the paint or by the stain on their baby furniture and stuff like that. And,
right.
There were some schools of thought that that toxin that was in the paint or the wood stain became habit forming for that baby. There was something in it that made them crave that taste. And and I've read other stories similar to that that kind of thought. So, and I can believe that. I can believe that there's something. And, I mean, it's always amazing to see something that you use on a regular basis and see a workup of everything that's in it, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, my God. Well, it's like I never knew. If you'd have told me 20 years ago that there was animal fat in Jell-O, I'd have said, what the hell are you talking about?
It's not animal fat. It's actually more gross than that. It's ligaments. It's the ligaments of the joints. They boil them down, and it creates this gooey substance, and that's what they make Jell-O out of. That's why, yeah, I'm the same as you. When I found out that Jell-O wasn't vegetarian, when I became a vegetarian and I found out I couldn't eat Jell-O anymore, I was like, are you kidding me? Because I love Jell-O. There are vegetarian forms of Jell-O, by the way. So if anybody's listening to this and they're vegetarian, they didn't know that, no worries, because there are vegan and vegetarian forms of Jell-O. Not the brand name, but of the product, you know. But, yeah, who would have known, you know?
Well, or there's a million things like that because you just don't think about it. I don't know. Nothing coming to my head right now, but I know that through the years you and I have discussed this a lot, and of course you've researched a lot of it and are very knowledgeable in most of this. This, by the way, folks, is one of the things or some of the things that are going to be in Shelley's book. So
yep.
This will be kind of a go-to kind of book if you're on a new path in regard to your health and to the things that are better for you. She will be writing this book based on all the research she's done over the years to bring herself to a better place. And, of course, all the stuff that she learned at the Institute as well plays into this and some other things that she's been a part of. So I, for one, look forward to reading it because I think it's going to answer questions that you haven't been able to ask yet because you don't even know that they exist, which is a very interesting place to be, I think. Along with some of these other, the eating disorders that I just mentioned, the anorexia, the bulimia, the other two that I mentioned, the pica and the binge eating disorder, these that I'm going to talk about right now are things that can happen to people on a less constant basis, having to do with what's going on in their life. And these are kind of scary as well. So we're going to go over these quickly. Compulsive overeating, a characteristic of binge eating disorder, in which people tend to eat more than necessary, resulting in more stress. This is mainly caused by the binge eating disorder. So compulsively stuffing yourself until you feel sick is a binge eating disorder. But if you don't do it all the time, you don't think that you have a problem. But if you do that, if you compulsively stuff yourself one night because you've had an incredibly bad day, or you're sad about something, or you're worried about something, or whatever's going on in your life, and that is your way instead of getting drunk or getting high, you're compulsively overeating, you need to think about it. You need to understand that this is not the right way to go and that this is a problem. Purging disorder, characterized by recurrent purging to control weight or shape in the absence of binge eating episodes. So again, if you figure out ways, say you go out one day and you're with a bunch of friends and you eat a whole bunch of stuff that you know may put a couple pounds on you the next day, and you don't normally do this because you usually keep a good eye on your diet and you know your intake of food, but one day you get a little carried away and you decide that evening to throw up. or vomit, then this is a disorder as well.
Wait a minute, Reem, didn't that line say in the absence of binge eating? So they're saying people that purge when they haven't binge eaten. Read that sentence again that you were just commenting on.
You're right. You're right. Or shape in the absence of eating episodes. Yes, so you're right. That's what it is. It's a disorder where you purge whether you ate or not. You're right.
Right.
Yep. And rumination. I never even heard that word before. Rumination. R-U-M-I-N-A-T-I-O-N. Rumination. Characterized by involving the repeated painless regurgitation of food following a meal, which is then either re-chewed and re-swallowed or discarded. Ugh.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow.
Jeez, I'm so glad I read that. Well, that's horrible. I hope there's nobody out there that's doing anything like that. That, for me, just sounds horrible.
Wow.
Diabulimia, characterized by the deliberate manipulation of insulin levels by diabetics in an effort to control their weight.
Never heard that one before.
Yeah, I never have either. Food maintenance, characterized by a set of aberrant eating behaviors of children in foster care.
Say that one again?
Yeah, I'm trying to analyze that one too. Food maintenance, characterized by a set of aberrant eating behaviors of children in foster care. I'm assuming that means in an abusive situation, food maintenance, where, I don't know, maybe just that kids pick up a bad set of ground rules for their eating, their everyday eating, because they were in a place, in a foster care place, where they were only allowed to eat certain things. I don't know. I don't know. It says number 20.
I don't know if this has to do with food maintenance. I'm curious. I'll probably check that after the show. We can always do a follow up on that. But I know that in some instances in foster care where the children were deprived of either a sufficient quantity of food or, like you said, a variety, and they weren't allowed certain things that they craved, once they came out of the foster care system, they turned into almost food hoarders where they would try to console themselves for what they feel was kept from them when they were in the foster care system. I don't know if that's what they're talking about. I know that that exists, but I don't know if that's what food maintenance is. But I just know that what I just described, maybe, because I know that that's a situation that has existed in people that were in foster care and not taken care of properly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that makes sense. That makes good sense, and it could be that and the cravings of the things that they were never allowed to have and have once or something. But yeah, we'll up on that. Night eating syndrome, characterized by morning anorexia, evening polyphagia, polyphagia, polyphagia. I don't know. Abnormally increased appetite for consumption of food, frequently associated with insomnia, and causes injury to the hypothalamus.
Wow.
I do know people. I have people call me. People that I have been friends with for, in most cases, a long time, who have a sleeping disorder, the insomnia, which we've talked about recently. And their answer is often to eat. And they normally eat very lightly. I don't know that they're anorexic or have any issues like that. But the insomnia does entice them into, in their words, eat, you know, a whole container of ice cream. You know, a whole thing of Entenmann's, like what you just mentioned. And their body isn't, they don't do that as a rule, and there's no bulimia involved where they get rid of it again. It actually causes some harm. And, you know, eating, even though there's a lot of talk, and I think we talked about this on the show about insomnia and the different ways to overcome insomnia, eating usually keeps you awake. It doesn't usually.
Yeah.
I know everyone that after they eat, they feel sleepy and they want to fall asleep in the recliner. And, I mean, that's a picture that we all get after Thanksgiving dinner, all the men sitting in the living room supposedly watching football and they're all snoring. It is something that we kind of put together, but if you're struggling from not being able to sleep, eating and putting your body in a place to digest the food is really not the right idea. So I think we talked about little things like warm milk or something like that, or a chamomile tea. You know, those kind of things would be more prudent than stuffing yourself.
As long as it's not dairy milk.
Well, we talked about that, too, on the show. We talked about the fact that you and I both prefer something other than whole milk. And if you, well, I don't want to get into that. We've already talked about that on the show, about what the whole milk can do to you if you drink it before you go to bed at night. Orthorexia nervosa, a term used by Stephen Bratman to characterize an obsession with a pure diet, in which people develop an obsession with avoiding unhealthy foods to the point where it interferes with a person's life. Wow. We could do a whole show on that one, Shel.
Wow. I know. I mean, I know people in this lifestyle that have become so fanatic. And it's good to be strict, all right? So I think some people may be diagnosed with that are just very disciplined. But I also know people that were strict to the point of being almost counterproductive, where, in other words, their attitude towards other people that weren't eating what they did, they actually became almost fanatical to the point where they were deterring friends and family from wanting to be around them, because they wouldn't go places that food they couldn't eat was being served and that kind of thing. So, you know, there's one thing with having the attitude that this is a decision you've made for yourself, but being a little lighthearted and realistic with it, and or going to a point where you just can't have yourself subjected to being around food that you can't eat and stuff like that. It almost becomes a neurosis for these people. They can't even be around food that they're not going to eat. You know, just don't eat it. I mean, who cares if it's sitting there? But they don't want to see it. They don't want to smell it. And they get themselves so worked up emotionally that they'll actually have a physical response if they smell like meat or something like that. It actually makes them nauseated. You know, so I've seen extremes in that with people that are trying to go healthy, but almost let the pendulum swing too far the other direction. They become so fanatical that they're actually stressing themselves out and really not benefiting their body to the point they could if they were just a little calmer with their decision.
Well, but don't you think, now this is a personal point of view, and I want to make that clear. Don't you think that extreme lifestyles attract extreme people?
Oh, absolutely, of course.
So do I. And through the years, as you say, I have had, I mean, I can't tell you how many people have called me on the phone or walked into my office or still to this day call me on the phone because they are absolutely immersed in the rights and wrongs of being on a, in particular, a raw food diet. and to the point where, you know, they have a kitchen now that is set up where they're growing their wheatgrass, they're growing their sprouts, they're, you know, they're soaking their nuts, they're doing all of these kind of things, which is wonderful. And in some cases, there were health issues in the beginning. They've gained some control over the health issues. But now they have become immersed in the, I don't know, the psychological part of never, ever touching anything else that isn't this stuff. And I listen to them and I think to myself, because it's hard for you if somebody comes to you with something like that and you know that they've done themselves some good, you know that they've brought themselves health-wise to a better place, but now you see that they have become, you know, I don't know, what's a good word? I don't know, compulsive about...
Right.
About right. this, and that this is a danger too, that this is a red flag that's saying lighten up a little bit.
Right, right.
Cause
that's the point I want to make. There's a big difference between being strict or disciplined. Being disciplined is a good thing. Being fanatical or compulsive is not. When your discipline steps over that line and now your personal lifestyle choice and discipline is now affecting your quality of life, affecting your relationship with people, then it's time to maybe step back and look and see if maybe you've gone a little bit too compulsive with it. And like you said, be a little bit more lighthearted.
Well, and like I said in the beginning, this attracts those kind of personalities.
Yep.
And we've seen that on many, many occasions, and we still, I think I'm speaking for Shelley as well as myself, we've seen the worth of being able to nourish your body in a way that never harms it, which is an amazing thing, because in today's mm-hmm. world, so much synthetic and so much man-made food items that somewhere down the line we're going to find out we should never be ingesting because the FDA has trouble keeping up with everything that's that comes out there every day. So the purer you are, I think the better off you are. And, of course, we've talked at length about pesticides and the worth of organic food and things like that to stop yourself. Some people can eat garbage. Don't get me wrong. Some people can eat garbage, and they have this wonderful system that just separates the garbage from the good stuff, and they're just good to go. They could eat crap all day long, and they stay very, very healthy. But then
yeah, I know.
Then you have the rest of the world that that can't do that because we are all so different in what our bodies will accept and take anything from that's worth anything to us is always different. So, but I find that a good one. Okay, I'm going to go real quick. Drunkorexia, commonly characterized by purposely restricting food intake in order to reserve food calories for alcoholic calories. Oh, I think that's an
wow.
Exercising excessively, no, forget it, in order to burn calories consumed from drinking and over-drinking alcohols in order to purge previously consumed food. Oh, boy, that's a bad one.
Wow.
Pregorexia, characterized by extreme dieting and over-exercising in order to control pregnancy weight. Oh, this is so dangerous. I hope nobody out there is doing that. You could hurt your baby. Undernutrition during pregnancy is associated with low birth weight, coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes, stroke, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, and depression. Please, if you are pregnant, don't do anything foolish. You don't need to do that. So we're out of time. I want to thank everybody and let you know that Tomorrow's show is going to be about AIDS, an old story, but a constantly changing story, and maybe we can enlighten all of us a little bit about what's going on out there now. So thanks, Shelley. We will talk later.
Yes.
Okay. God bless everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, Rainey. Bye, everyone.
Bye, sweetie.